Welcome to the 8th Scottish Housing News podcast with myself, Jimmy Black, and Kieran Finlay, the editor of Scottish Housing News. And with us today in the studio, or at least at the other end of a Zoom link, are Martin Gavin, who's the Improvement Lead at Homeless Network Scotland, and Gordon McCrae, who's the Deputy Director of Shelter Scotland. And unsurprisingly, I guess, with that personnel, the topic today is homelessness. There's 14,161 homeless households applied for help in the 6 months, April to September last year. That's a lot. It's about the same as used to apply in a whole year in the 1980s. And there's over 13,000 people in temporary accommodation, and 7,500 of those are children. What's going on? How did we get here? Why have the figures doubled over the past few decades? Gordon.
It's a conundrum that we've given quite a lot of attention politically. To the scourge of homelessness, and yet we've seen the situation get worse, and we have to start, I think, having a more honest debate about what is actually happening in our communities. The nature of precarious housing coupled with precarious employment means that for people who are just about managing, the spiral into homelessness is an all too real experience. So you ask what's happening. We have a crisis. We have a housing crisis that has gone unaddressed, that we've had lots of great rhetoric in Scotland and elsewhere, but we're failing on the delivery. Ultimately, we need better homelessness services that actually enforce people's rights, and we need more homes. We're not doing that fast enough or well enough.
Martin, how did we get to the point where homelessness seems to be actually getting worse in spite of all the government initiatives that there are to make it better?
Well, I agree with much of what Gordon's just said, and I think Scotland definitely has some of the, if you like, the most robust legislation around homelessness, probably certainly in the UK, perhaps even in Europe. And as you say, yet we are moving in the wrong direction in terms of the statistics. As Gordon says, affordable housing, properly affordable housing, is a huge part of this, and there's a number of initiatives in play at the moment and government strategies that talk about social housing. So there's, as Gordon says, it is a conundrum, because we've got this robust legislative framework, we've got an acknowledgement in the Scottish Parliament pretty much across the parties that something needs to be done.
Let's start a kind of deeper analysis by looking at rough sleeping. Kieran.
Yeah, Martin, on rough sleeping alone, what exactly is rough sleeping and how do we currently measure it? And does everybody agree?
We were part of an event just before COVID, actually. In fact, it was probably the last live event that many people will have attended. It took place at the City Chambers in Glasgow, and it was Join the Dots, we called it. And the idea was to really bring everyone together who cares about this subject and wants to address it. And obviously, again, everything changed within a month. And what we saw across Scotland was that when we act, and we act in the right way, and the money is made available very quickly, rough sleeping was all but eliminated. Rough sleeping is essentially, it's hard to quantify and it's hard to measure. And what's critical for us is to make sure that we don't drift back to where we were prior to the pandemic, when there were much higher levels of rough sleeping, and we are seeing that in places, unfortunately. So that's really important.
Was one of these actions to end these communal style night shelters, and if so, what has been replacing these?
Well, there's a collective of organisations which Shelter is part of as well, called Everyone Home. That's about, I think they're up to about 36, 37 organisations now in Scotland. And you know, during the pandemic, that was set up as a response to the pandemic from the homelessness sector, and it includes some of the big players like Shelter and Crisis, but also many smaller charities with very specific objectives and aims. And the first ambitions, if you like, which was articulated by the Everyone Home Collective, was this need for health reasons, public health reasons, to find an alternative to communal night shelters. So I'm very pleased to say that over the last couple of years, we haven't seen communal night shelters in Scotland. It's been more of a sort of hotel-based approach to emergency accommodation, and with a focus on moving through that accommodation where possible to permanent housing, if that's possible. And that obviously brings challenges with it as well. And just to add that, again, the important thing is not to go back. You know, we've reached a point in Scotland now where we no longer have communal night shelters. That's long been an ambition. I don't think any of us believed that it would perhaps come about as quickly as it has, so we mustn't go back.
So you've mentioned some positives to come out of the pandemic there. What are the biggest dangers, though, as we come out of it? What do we need to happen to avoid homelessness being created, Gordon?
We have to start holding people accountable. I mean, the biggest challenge we face is that we have these very progressive laws on paper, but we actually celebrated, my mum's talking about the difference that putting money in the hands of third sector organisations during the pandemic made to get people off the streets. And we celebrated that. And of course we should celebrate it. But we should also reflect that we should have had people in the streets in the first place when we know that this is possible. All it takes is money and political will. And we treated a health pandemic differently to how we treated a housing pandemic. And so for me, I think the question is more about why did it take these events to force the hand of decision makers in Scotland? There is no rational reason why we couldn't have done what we did at the start of the pandemic before now, other than there is not enough pressure placed on political decision makers. And I think that's something for us as a sector to consider. I think we do sometimes fall into the trap of sitting around the table and designing utopia instead of just holding people to account for the simple things, build the houses, enforce the rights. We have, despite the very clear reduction in rough sleeping, the latest statistics show nearly 1,500 people report sleeping rough. 4% of overall applications, a small percentage. But still 1,500 people report sleeping at least one night rough the night prior to them making their homeless application. So we need to, I think there's a cautionary note for us as a sector not to over-celebrate doing the basics well. I think we have to be looking forward and say what's on the horizon. This is a really tough time for social landlords. There's rent arrears are on the increase. The protections that have actually suppressed homelessness in the last few years. Again, we can see in the homelessness statistics a bit of a decline, but that's a decline at a time when the courts went open and you couldn't evict people from the private rented sector. Again, government announced that as evidence of success in tackling homelessness. And so I think we just need a bit of a reality check. We need to hold our hands up as well as third sector organisations. We took an eye off the ball in certain areas. We have a real temporary accommodation crisis. 7,500 children are in temporary accommodation for nearly 500 days in most occasions. We know that has a detrimental impact on their life chances. And yet there is nothing really in the Ending Homelessness Together that seeks to address that.
Okay, nothing. We're going to come back to temporary accommodation. But over the last few years, we've seen some new duties placed on local councils, such as the right of single homeless people to be rehoused. We've also seen initiatives like Housing Options, Housing First, Rapid Rehousing. Still, the figures remain stubbornly high. So the government is currently consulting on new obligations, widely shared amongst all the public services, to prevent homelessness, a kind of legal duty to prevent homelessness. Is this likely to work, Gordon?
I think the jury's out on that. We really welcome the extension of the time frame when someone who is at risk of homelessness can access support and services from the local authority. Moving that from 3 months to 6 months makes sense to us because it's a kind of ultimately, if you're looking down the barrel of homelessness, then you need the help as soon as you can. We welcome the extension of some of these duties to wider public bodies so it doesn't all sit at the door of homelessness services. But it's a damning with faint praise on one aspect, but we don't oppose that. I think the question is this the urgent solution that we need right now? I'm not convinced, but it's not, as I say, it's not necessarily detrimental, and anything that improves practice is to be welcomed. There's one exception in the basket of recommendations to that support. And that's the thing which we actually think represents the biggest existential threat to Scotland's Scotland's homelessness rights framework, which is a proposal to move from councils discharging their duty to homeless people by enabling them to house them in what they call stable accommodation rather than permanent accommodation. That to us removes the rights of people rather than, because there's no recourse if you're just living with your aunt, your uncle, they could kick you out the next day. There's no recourse there. There's no protection there. And we just don't understand why that's been badged as something that's anything to do with preventing homelessness.
Underpinning a lot of the thinking around this, around prevention, is the report that came out actually around this time last year, although it doesn't feel that long, from the Scotland Prevention Review Group. Homeless Network Scotland's small part in that, was to facilitate the Prevention Commission, which was a group of people with lived experience who were able to work with those producing the report, you know, to really make sure that lived experience voice was in there and it was certainly heard and indeed included in the report. We recently held a members event. Anyone who's a member of Homeless Network will recognise the emails that pop through every now and again for regular sort of members events, and there was over 100 people attended this one. Prevention sits at the heart of resolving homelessness, and we know that homelessness begins in communities. It doesn't start under Central Station Bridge or outside Waverley Station, you know, where many people feel that they come into contact with it, although that's not always the case. But it doesn't start in these places, it starts in communities. And I think that the way to get to the bottom of this is a sort of place-based response, which really works the assets that are already there in a lot of communities so that people can stay. People can stay where they live. They don't have to move away. They don't have to go and find services. They can stay where they are. So for us and for our members, you know, prevention sits at the heart of any hope we have of resolving homelessness. So absolutely welcome any focus on it, particularly to this extent.
Well, I spoke about it, and it was very well attended, but I think it was noteworthy that there wasn't really anyone advocating for this change to stable accommodation over the existing permanent accommodation. I think it would be principle of prevention really to keep going forward. I think it'd be ideal if we could decouple that misfocused proposal from the rest of what is a very progressive set of recommendations.
Our hope, I was just going to say, our hope is always to provide the space really for that kind of debate and that kind of discussion.
Let's explore rapid rehousing, and maybe the whole thing about stable accommodation comes into that too. Let's say you were new to the strange world of housing, it would just seem like common sense to give homeless people the available houses as soon as they become available. But homeless people sit in waiting lists for years competing with other people who are not homeless. So the rapid rehousing strategy is still relatively new. What needs to happen to make it work?
So the rapid rehousing framework, I guess, sits behind the whole approach to homelessness in Scotland. It's about, as you say, it seems to make perfect sense.
Gordon, what's your take on the rapid rehousing? Is that working? What do we need to do to make it work?
Like many things in the homelessness sector just now, the rhetoric is brilliant. I mean, the commitment by ministers and people around the table to change how we operate is real and has taken time to bed in. But I think the delivery of this is probably where we see the missteps that have characterised the last 5 years. You know, rapid rehousing. You know, how do we make homelessness brief and rare? You know, that's the goal. Well, let's get people in tenancies earlier. It's not happened because there aren't the houses. So we've got rapid rehousing, but still not got the steady supply of homes. Now we're in a particular problem right now with voids going up and up due to the kind of combined pressures of Brexit, COVID, inflation. You know, it's tough for social analysts to get front doors to turn, you know, literally front doors to go and turn tenancies around. But we have also seen strategic errors, and we had local authorities planning to reduce their use of temporary accommodation, taking temporary accommodation out of their plans because they were going to do rapid rehousing. That's why we've got 7,500 children in temporary accommodation. Record numbers. The demand on temporary accommodation is continuing to grow, and yet we've got this cognitive dissonance about actually what we need to do for a strategy going forward. The no wrong door when it comes to accessing homelessness services is and can be transformative. But we still need literal front doors to get people out of the homelessness services and into a permanent home.
Gordon, can I interrupt you? Because the fact that all these people are in temporary accommodation means, by definition, they are in flats or houses or something, some kind of temporary accommodation. Some of them will be in unsuitable accommodation, but most of it's like network flats or whatever. So the housing's there. We're just not going to give it to them. We're going to make them to move somewhere else before we house them. Does that make any sense?
No, because what we also see are record numbers of unsuitable accommodation or the breaches. So they may be in a flat, but they may be overcrowded. They may have an impairment within their household that means they're not living suitably. It may be that it's not in a location that allows them to work. So they're actually giving them a house, but not giving them the option to rebuild their lives. How, as we all know, tackling homelessness is not just about homes. It's about the social network for an individual, their ability to rebuild their lives, so that homelessness is a transient experience rather than a defining moment in their lives. The problem we have just now is we're putting people in temporary accommodation and not giving them a route back out of it. And yeah, I mean, there are some people who, if you spent 500 days in the temporary accommodation, you have started to put down roots in that community. So maybe there are occasions where you can flip that into a permanent home. But we're also incredibly reliant on private lets for temporary accommodation just now in Scotland. So it's not always feasible that it would be affordable to make that a permanent home for someone, because they couldn't afford the rent were it not being provided through the homelessness system. So when we talk about homelessness, it is important we always reflect that it's talking about statutory homelessness. We're not talking about sleeping. We're talking about people that have rights within a system. And that does mean that in general, homelessness in Scotland is indoors, not outdoors. But that doesn't mean we're succeeding in reducing the harm caused by homelessness on children or individuals.
Martin, we've talked a bit about Housing First. This week we heard that it's provided more than 1,000 tenancies for people with the high support needs that you mentioned there. Housing First seems to be a proven concept. Are we scaling it up to the levels required? And if not, what's stopping it?
So Housing First is something that Homeless Network Scotland's been involved in over the past 3 years as part of a Pathfinder that's been taking place in Scotland. That's been in Glasgow, Edinburgh, Stirling, Dundee and Aberdeenshire, which was a joint consortium. That's winding up. That Pathfinder officially comes to an end in at the end of March. So, over that time in the Pathfinder, we estimate, and there will be a report coming out about this, around about 550 to 600 tenancies created during that time with an 80 to 90% tenancy sustainment rate. In other words, 80 to 90% of people have been able to remain in their homes. Tragically, many of the reasons why people don't is that someone has passed away, but there have been no evictions in the Pathfinder during that time. So it's been, in that respect, it's been successful. And Gordon's been at many of the meetings actually that we've had over the past 2 or 3 years, where there's been a bit more analysis of how it's working, and obviously we're learning and have been learning all the time. That was the idea of having that sort of Pathfinder model. What's happening now is that it's starting to scale up across Scotland. And it's worth noting that Scotland is the only part of the UK where we've got what you might call a national Housing First programme. And there are some great pilots in Wales and parts of England. But in Scotland, we've now got a national Housing First approach. Again, for that group of people whose homelessness is made worse by addictions and mental ill health and some of the really sharpest experiences that we could imagine. So it's across all the local authorities. We've now got, I think, just over 1,000 reported by the Scottish Government last week. Scottish Government's now starting to collect and locate that information, which was something that our organisation did previously. So it is scaling up. across the country, and not every local authority will have a high need in terms of that Housing First group, but certainly, as you would imagine, Glasgow and Edinburgh, Aberdeen, Dundee, the Pathfinder areas, and also some rural authorities as well, are finding it useful.
You mentioned evictions there. Obviously, we've talked about prevention. One of the ways of preventing homelessness is not to evict anyone. There was emergency legislation during the pandemic, which obviously played a vital role in protecting people's homes. But as elements of this come to an end shortly, Gordon, what concerns do you have?
We're very worried. We know that the extension to the notice period in the private rental sectors ends at the end of this month. Mm-hmm. So we move back to the 3 month period. Some of the protections are being made permanent. You know, some of the pre-action requirements in the private rented sector, you know, require landlords to demonstrate that they've taken additional steps to seek to engage with their tenant. But the area we find the most worrying is actually the prevalence of eviction for rent arrears in the social sector. And most surprisingly, amongst councils as well, because you know, the councils are the ones who end up picking up the other costs of eviction. We published some research last year just showing that it's a bit of a band, but the minimum cost of the financial cost to the public sector is around about £15,000 per eviction. The median cost is probably in the region of about £25,000. The business case for helping people stay in the property they're in is actually pretty strong. The challenge we face, and I don't sort of point the finger of blame at councils for this. I think the challenge we face is that arrears are going through the roof. And you know, the Scottish Housing Regulator published their own figures just these last couple of weeks showing the scale of the problem. And our concern is that the Scottish Government continue to say that councils are properly resourced to meet these challenges. We're not convinced they are. We've had good policy extensions, things like unsuitable accommodation orders extended, other duties extended into local authorities, but they don't always come with resource. And we need to make sure that new policy is matched with new resource. So if we're going to stop people being evicted in the social sector, we need to make sure that councils are able to invest in the prevention services, the engagement work that does make the difference. But too often, it's the non-statutory services that are the first to go when belts are tightened, even though the business case for keeping them going sometimes seems self-evident to those of us sort of looking at the research and the evidence that presents itself.
So something that everyone at home has been really strong about since the very earliest days last year is this idea of no evictions into homelessness. This was one of the initial pillars of the report that Everyone Home published way back, I think it was June 2020, in response to the pandemic. Now, that's not a new idea. I mean, we, as a sector, we've never wanted anyone to be evicted into homelessness. It goes without saying. But I think it's become a central pillar of the approach of Everyone Home since then. That, you know, this idea that, you know, we live in the real world and things happen. We know that, but the idea of evicting a person or a family into a situation of homelessness, as Gordon articulated there, you know, the cost in financial terms, never mind the moral case or the emotional impact it has on a family, it doesn't make sense in any respect. So that's a very strong pillar of the message being put out by Everyone Home, which, as I say, is now up to about 36, 37 organisations in Scotland that care about homelessness. So there's a very powerful message coming from the sector that you know, people, they may have agreed to a plan, or they may have agreed to this, or they may have agreed to that, but the idea that you just don't evict somebody into homelessness sits at the centre of our approach.
Do you agree?
It's a very easy test, though, Kieran. Can I just...
Absolutely,
The test of whether or not the use of eviction is actually a last resort, I think, would be whether the Shelter Scotland Legal Service ever has to go to court and successfully defend an eviction proceeding. Our lawyers do that every day.
one of the things that's clear from even the sort of relatively short conversation that we've had today is that there is no one thing that is going to resolve homelessness, which is what we're all working to try to do. It's a suite of responses across society, and this idea of which we talked about briefly earlier on, of bringing in health, social care, different parts of the third sector, different parts of the public sector, and everybody really working towards the one objective of preventing homelessness before it begins. That really is what we need to be looking at. We were recently involved in a lottery funded project in Gorbals and Pollock, which injected £200,000 of lottery money through Homeless Network Scotland into a number of organisations to prevent homelessness in those areas. And that was acknowledging, while it's a learning experience, that it was a test of change project, there's an acknowledgement that there are existing community assets within those areas, within all communities, that can be leveraged and can be put to better use so that we're preventing homelessness.
We need to agree what success looks like. What does it mean to have improved the system? So, we look at metrics like affordable housing need in Scotland. Is it going down? We talked about social house building. The number that we came up with in a report two years ago now with SFHA, Scottish Federation of Housing Associations and Chartered Ministry of Housing, that was just the target to start reducing affordable housing need. That wasn't the target to make social housing a realistic prospect for all low-income households or anyone that wants it in Scotland. We're still not meeting that target. So on supply, we're not there yet. On prevention, we're still seeing people trapped, seeing open cases open for longer, and we're seeing people trapped in temporary accommodation for longer. So what is it we need to do? It does all come back to homes. The other piece for me, I mentioned this earlier, is accountability. We need to get to a place where we're comfortable with accountability. Not blame, but accountability. We've had a lot of initiatives. I think there's elements of the sector now that are just a bit exhausted. And when I look at colleagues in the public sector, it's just one thing after another that they have to respond to. And it takes us away from just really understanding what does this good homelessness service looks like. One of the biggest changes in the last couple of years has been the transformation in Glasgow's homelessness services. So I was saying, just before the pandemic, Shelter Scotland actually took a judicial review to the Court of Session to try and force a change in the approach they were taking. They were recording record numbers of failure to accommodate, and yet nothing was happening about it. Regulator wasn't intervening, ministers weren't intervening, and I think the sector as a whole, ourselves included at times, were just a bit quiet. It became a kind of sense of, well, that's just the way it is. What happened when the pandemic hit was actually the new resource was made available. New casework teams were created, new training was put in place, additional staff were recruited, and they've actually been able to really turn that service around. And what that tells us is that we can't do this on the cheap. £50 million was never going to end homelessness. That was the price tag placed on ending homelessness together. And we know that because we added another £50 million at the last election. We need to get realistic about what does it cost to have a high quality housing and homelessness system that respects people's rights, that treats everyone, including people of colour and other marginalised groups, properly so they don't face discrimination. That's not something that is going to happen by just better practice alone. It's going to take investment, it's going to take accountability. That's why at Shelter Scotland, we are focused quite narrowly now, and we openly acknowledge how narrow our focus is on delivering social housing and enforcing housing rights. That's what we think are the transformative pieces. If everyone in Scotland is literate in their rights, if they can enforce their rights, whether that's with a private landlord or local authority, but even as a homeowner dealing with factors of others, then we can shift the balance of power from being in the interest of the producers, the landlords and the suppliers, and over to the consumers, the tenants, the home people who are homeless and the people who need housing. That to us is a goal worth fighting for.
Okay, but there are problems ahead. There are very ambitious targets on creating carbon neutral homes, net zero homes, and that could eat up the capital investment required to build more new homes for social rent, and possibly perversely encourage councils to demolish older housing stock. And there's new legislation in the private sector which could reduce, arguably, the stock of private rented housing. So is it right to regard these as threats to the adequate supply of affordable housing?
Yes. I think yes, but only if we sleepwalk into it. Only if we don't take action now. So I think there's a real question as to why is the social sector expected to go first when it comes to upgrading stock to these new standards. Right now, the greenest home you can find in Scotland is a new built social property. It's built to a higher standard, it's got a longer lifespan. So the social sector are already doing their bit. The idea that we could see accommodation that was built before the 1920s that could never really be brought up to modern standards become a liability in a housing association's balance sheet rather than an asset, that's the potential we're facing with some of these changes. We are worried that if the expectation that new housing will be delivered on the back of borrowing against future rents paid by tenants rather than by the collective resources of all taxpayers in Scotland, then we do face the prospect of reduced capital borrowing powers, capital borrowing limits for social landlords, and a reduced expectation of delivering the homes we need to reduce affordable housing need.
Both Shelter Scotland and Homeless Network Scotland came out against the UK government's proposed Nationality and Borders Bill recently. They've called for, among other things, a full review of a number of flagship Scottish government policies, including ending homelessness together, with a view of taking action within these devolved areas of competence to prevent and mitigate the harmful impacts of this bill. What areas, Gordon, I'll come to you first, are particularly worrying with regard to homelessness?
Well, the area that most obviously leaps out is foreign nationals who have no recourse to public funds, for whom the Westminster legislation appears to prevent Scottish or local public services engaging and giving them the safety and support that they require. We think there's an opportunity for Scottish ministers to test the limits of their power by taking a court challenge around their equalities duties, their social work duties, their public health duties, that would allow them, under those responsibilities, to provide better services for people who technically have no recourse to public funds.
So this is an issue that's been around for a long time. And there has been some exploration of what was possible in terms of what Scotland was able to do. And I know that took place a couple of years ago now. There was some legal advice sought in that as well from an advocate, I believe, to try and look at what could be done in Scotland. It is limiting because of the public funds definition. No recourse to public funds, just very briefly, means that people cannot claim most benefits. That's probably the easiest way to put it. So that, they have no access to financial support, as Gordon says, potentially leading to destitution. So councils are required to provide some social care support for children, and there are some other caveats within that. But essentially, people don't have access to any money or any form of support. So there is a piece of work ongoing at the moment in Scotland, looking at a fairer way to deal with that. It has the support of the Scottish Government and many third sector organisations as well, and that's due to emerge publicly, hopefully, in sort of April. There's an interesting point that Gordon raises about the courts and things. It's at the moment, as I say, we're looking at what we can do within existing legislation, but there's widespread opposition to this, not only in Scotland, not only from the third sector, but also in the Lords, and indeed across, I'm pretty sure across all the parties actually as well. So, yeah, not a popular route at the moment.
Okay, we're coming to the end of the 8th Scottish Housing News podcast. One last question for you both. Is there anything about the homelessness scene, about the housing scene, that you can actually now feel optimistic about? Is there anything that is actually going well?
Yeah, I mean, definitely. I think there's a real energy and an optimism amongst the sector to do things differently, to focus on systems change and to not accept that this is as good as it gets. And I think we see within the housing sector as a whole, actually a lot of clarity around what needs to happen. So I think they've taken that positivity, that focus on what can be better, and hopefully expanding it into how we get people outside of the housing and homelessness movement to see the merits and value to the whole, all of society, of having a well-functioning, fair housing system.
Martin.
Yeah, no, well said, Gordon. And I think I'm optimistic about what I've seen during the pandemic, really. Some of the meetings that Gordon and I have both been involved in, and colleagues as well, not just Everyone Home Collective, but across the board, that sort of united sense that this is a time to work collectively, collaboratively, to tackle some of the really entrenched issues that we know are there, and that we also a lot of the time feel that we know what needs to be done to sort them out. So there's been brilliant collaboration across the sector and beyond the sector as well, with housing and with social care and with health. That's starting to really take root, I think, in Scotland particularly. That sense of, this is the same people that we're working with here very often. There are not separate groups of people who need social care and separate groups of people who need help with their mental well-being. There's just one group of people, isn't there, in Scotland, and with a whole range of different needs, and they'll come, as individuals, will come in and out of different services at different points. And I think there is a real understanding of that now. And that's something that I feel very optimistic about in terms of the way Scotland approaches homelessness. And also some of the things we've seen during the pandemic that have worked. So we know they work now, and we know we can do it when we put our mind to it.
Well, on that positive note, it's thanks to Martin Gavin, Homeless Network Scotland, and to Gordon McRae from Shelter Scotland, and to my co-host Kieran Finlay, the editor of the Scottish Housing News.